It's Jimbo Times. So, Andrew, and it is such a pleasure to be joined by you at JT the LA Storyteller podcast this morning. Welcome, brother.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, 100%. We have to chat with Andrew because Andrew's up to a number of things. Andrew's a creator slash business owner, but you know what? Let me not take your intro from you. Why don't you tell the Los Cuentos listenership about yourself, Andrew and the man?
I'm originally from Philadelphia, and I moved to LA about 21 years ago. I've worked in a variety of different industries, everything from working at a boba shop to working in reality television, and then I eventually produced a couple indie feature films, and then opened this business called Boo's Philly Cheesesteaks about 11 years ago, and been working there ever since as the managing director of the company and looking to do bigger and better things with our business, but always making sure we stay true and continue to make wonderful, delicious cheesesteaks for everyone in SoCal.
I mean, even just picturing one now, that cheese oozing, I'm going to make it a priority to make it out to Boo's this week.
Yeah, come through. We got you.
100%. Now, you're also a very versatile business owner. So before we get into the backstory of Boo's and what you're up to with Boo's right now, why don't you tell us a little bit about this Brazilian jiu-jitsu competition that you just participated in too, because if you don't know, now you know. Drew is also up to some training and actually has quite a few belts to his name. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that for a moment?
So I am currently a blue belt under Cabrinha here in Los Angeles, and I started Brazilian jiu-jitsu 2018 as a way for me to continue to just be fit and whatnot, because working in the restaurant game was kind of crazy. You kind of get these crazy nights where you're just constantly drinking. In fact, I was drinking like almost every night after work because we're working like 12 hours, 13 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then as soon as you get off, you're like, oh, I need a drink. So I needed to break that bad habit. And so I decided that jiu-jitsu would be a great way because I know you can train into your 70s and it wasn't like you're getting punched in the head or anything. And you don't need a team. Like, it's not a team sport, so we don't have to do it like basketball. You need to have, three people, five people or whatever to compete. So I decided to try it, and I had some back issues, went through that for a little bit, took up hot yoga. I do hot yoga, which is fantastic for people, especially as you get older. And then, I've been training ever since, like, 2019. Oh, well, I did yoga for a while. I was out for a minute, did yoga to kind of rehab my back a little bit. I highly recommend doing yoga for any sort of back or any sort of, like, minor injuries to get back to recovery. Definitely try yoga. It's fantastic. And then I started back in 2019, I believe, March. And I've been training ever since. I'm finally got my blue belt like 2 years ago and working, trying to get to my purple belt, which hopefully in the next year or so, that'd be cool. And so this past, was a month ago or so, I went to my first tournament in Cerritos, and I was originally in like the 41 to 45 year old division. At my weight class, I was a lightweight class, and there was no one in my division, so I had to go down to the 30-year-old division because there was like 10. I wanted to fight, you know what I'm saying? So I saw the one that had like 10 people in it, and I was like, all right, cool. But I was like, dang, these are all like young 30-year-old motherfuckers, but I ended up, I went to do my first fight. I did lose, but I gained so much. It was like my first ever one-on-one v1 tournament. People are yelling and screaming, the fight starts, and it was really awesome. I learned a lot about how your mind can really focus when there's this competition right in front of you. Once the clock went and the bell rung for the competition to begin, I got really focused, and I was going up against a really tough guy. He knew what he was doing, and I actually lost. I got DQ'd because I didn't understand something about one position with the leg lock. And then, so I got DQ'd. So that's how I lost. But I was losing anyway. I was down 11-0 because The guy knew what he was doing. I didn't. But I gained a lot from that first fight. Because now, like, for my next one, okay, I know what to expect. So in a way, like, it wasn't really a loss. It was more of a win for me in the sense that I learned a lot about what to do, what not to do. Had to do more research on the rules. And then preparing for my next one in December.
I mean, congratulations to you for that. I think there's nothing better than encountering a loss for your first fight, actually, because I think it makes you reflect on what your process was leading up to that. And it makes you reflect, too, on how to improve, how to get into that second match. There's a quote out there somewhere that's like, there are 1,000 lessons in a loss, but only one in winning. The other part about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is that it's a beautiful sport, as in, like, it's very elegant in the way that y'all compete with each other. So, man, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I recommend anyone that wants to do some sort of martial art to check out BJJ as a way to get into it, whether you're young or old. I mean, there were grandmothers that were competing at the tournament. It was crazy.
What?
Yeah, so it's cool because you're not getting punched in the head. Like, listen, I do Muay Thai. I'm not the best at it, but, you know, I'm working to get there. But, I mean, I can't get punched in the head. You know what I'm saying? Consistently. It's just not something that I can do, and you don't want to keep getting punched in the head. But at least with jiu-jitsu, it's more of a grappling sport. So it's more understanding where your body positioning is and how to submit your opponent. And listen, for the first three, I think I just started like being able to really start submitting people this year. For the first like 3 years, it was just me just taking L's every single day, every day in class. But a sport like this really helps you to understand how to manage your breath, your breathing, your calmness under pressure. Because there's no situation to, I can't express it, but when someone's trying to choke you and they have their forearm on your neck, and you could either freak out or you can just be like, all right, cool, what's my next move? Just work from there. And then you could just, I apply that every day in my work life and in my relationships. Like, hey, this is a difficult situation. Let's breathe. What do I got to do next? So that's been really helpful. So I think that really helps young kids as well. I think this is probably one of the sports where I'm like, hey, this would be beneficial for young kids to learn how to do, because not only will they be able to protect themselves from bullies and all that kind of good stuff, but they'll be able to process information, organize it properly, and then they'll be able to learn, move forward, and do what they got to do in school or whatever they're doing. So I highly recommend it to everyone. It's fun, and I'm going to continue to do it for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I appreciate the note about especially picking that up as a youth. And I do know that in K-Town, we have a number of dojos and other special gyms that are exactly about honing in on the craft. And then you also mentioned that you initially started looking at this or looking into this because, especially after these long work days, you went out for a drink and you basically got to the point where you realized, okay, I got to put a pause on that and find another way to get rid of some of this stress or learn how to navigate, learn how to manage through it. Because it's almost like you don't really get rid of stress. You just have to learn how to cope with it, actually. Stress is like a constant presence in one's life. And it's not a matter of like altogether shooing it away somewhere, but it's a matter of kind of, as you're describing, knowing your next move and doing that in control of yourself to some great extent. So I imagine that this has actually allowed you or led you to place quite a curb on some of these older habits that you mentioned that initially interested you in the art form.
Yeah, I mean, when you're in a restaurant business or any kind of like business that you start from scratch or whatever it is, there's going to be a time period where you're just working all the time. And, you know, like I said, I was working with my staff like 12, 13 hour days, 7 days a week. We were constantly working, constantly. It was mayhem. Every single day there was an issue. So, you know, in the very beginning, I understood that. I think people that understand how to start a business, you're going to be stressed out for a good chunk of time, but you can't continue this type of work schedule for a long period of time. It was really in the beginning, right? And then at some point, you need to be like, all right, cool, what's the next stage? Because this is not a tenable situation. We're constantly working. And that's at least my point of view. Like, you can't continue to do that. You have to start, you got to start moving up and knowing how to delegate and grow your business and do the things that needs to be done. So you're not working 15, 16, 17 hour days and then going to a bar, you know, having a drink because you're pissed off about the previous 13 hours. So with that said, you know, when I found jiu-jitsu, I've always wanted to do some sort of martial art. So it just kind of worked itself out. And yeah, it's been great. And, you know, I really recommend it for people. It's a good transition for me because now, you know, in my 40s, with all the information available on YouTube, there's so much about, like, now I change my diet a lot, when I train, you know, my sleep stuff, like all these things that are important for you know, you to get better as a human being as I get older. Those are things I'm constantly working on and learning about so that I can improve my jiu-jitsu game, but also it's great for your mentality.
That's right. Now, for those of us who are just meeting Andrew for the first time, tell us a little bit about this business from Philly to the city of Los Angeles in both K-Town as well as the Silver Lake, East Hollywood area. Give us a little bit about the background, the origins here, because you also mentioned starting out in film and then getting your way into this entrepreneurialism. So give us the rundown.
So we started this business in 2011. Prior to that, I was working as a independent film producer. So I produced a couple of indie features, working on a lot of different types of small projects. And before that, I was in reality television. So I moved to LA in 2002 to work in the film and TV industry, doing mostly producing and directing. And I kind of got there as an indie producer, and I was trying to work my way in that direction. But my parents moved to LA. Long story short, with my parents, they were complaining about not having a good cheesesteak in Los Angeles. So my dad, as an entrepreneur himself, he's opened many businesses in Philadelphia, everything from delis to clothing stores and things of that nature. So he's understands how to open a business. And so he complained about cheesesteaks. I said, there isn't any cheesesteak place out here that was authentic and good. So then he kind of started this whole journey of trying to open up this cheesesteak place. I was, you know, doing the indie producing at the time, so I wasn't always working, constantly broke. That's just the reality of the situation. And my dad needed help opening this business, so I went ahead and just kind of helped him out. And my dad, you know, it was like an income generator for my mom and my dad while I was doing my thing. And yeah, we opened November of 2011. And I think a couple months later, LA Weekly came by and, you know, put up a little article called Sandwich of the Week. And we kind of had a line, like literally out the door once that article came out. So it turned into a thing. And so we started growing the business slowly but surely and making sure we did everything could to grow it to where it's at now. We opened Koreatown in 2014. And we also had a location inside the Forum. I believe that was like 2016 or so, 2017. So we had three locations going before the pandemic. And that's just how the business started. But, you know, very humble beginnings. We didn't start with very much. We didn't have, you know, it's just something that just started as a small family business. And now we hope to grow it even more and see where we go from there.
Man, that's so cool and it's so niche. And then you mentioned a couple things, including that y'all originally came over from Philly, that it was your pops who was looking for a Philly cheesesteak sandwich. Tell me for a moment off the top if you're familiar with the number of, say, Korean Americans or Korean American community members in Philadelphia. What would you put that number at?
I mean, I don't know the number now. I know that when I was there, it was growing, and the community is way bigger now than it was before, just because I think America is becoming more, it is becoming more diverse. So there's a lot of Koreans that live there, and Philadelphia is known for, at least generally, Philadelphia is known for having great schools. And so there's a lot of great schools out there, public schools, private schools, colleges, universities. And so, you know, a lot of parents want to have their kids go to a good school or live in a good school district. And so that's what that area is known for. And you know, Korean parents, their thing is, we're going to go to get my kids to a good school. We got to go to a good school district, you know what I'm saying? So that's been what Philadelphia is known for. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot more there than before.
Sure.
But I can't give you a number. I mean, there's I mean, from what I've heard, there's a lot of Korean kids out there now.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I completely agree that the nation is only becoming more diverse, more colorful, and it's got more booze Philly cheesesteaks out there and those kinds of stories. Now, are your parents visiting LA for a moment when they get out here and your pops is looking for a cheesesteak, or had they made the decision at that point to relocate here? Tell me a little bit about that.
So my dad was trying, he had a business in Korea that didn't work out. It failed.
In Seoul, that is?
Yeah, in Seoul. He was trying to do putt-putt out there. And if people don't know putt-putt, it's like, it's miniature golf courses. So my dad was trying to do blow it up in Korea. It didn't work out. And this was about 2007, just before 2008, around the financial crisis. So everything was, it was crazy. So my dad and my mom ended up actually moving in with me and my sister here in LA. Just because, yeah, things didn't work out for my parents. And yeah, that's basically how they moved to LA. And, you know, my dad ended up working a bunch of different jobs. He worked as a janitor, you know, going back and forth from his job on a bike at nighttime. And I think at one point we saved up enough money so my dad could buy an Avalon for like $500.
Wow.
That was in 2008. So that was kind of crazy because we were scrapping. It was, I was 28 at the time. And, you know, I'm trying to do my indie feat. Like, I knew what I was getting into, but getting into independent producing because I really wanted to tell good stories. And knowing that, I knew that I would be broke. So, you know, it was a scrappy time for all of us. But, you know what, that's what we went through, right? We handled it. We built a business from there. And that's where we are now. So, I mean, it was, it builds character. I always tell people, like, going through the struggle, going through the hard times is really important for you to figure out who you are. And I'll acknowledge that fact that it was pretty tough. It was rough for all of us. But, you know, we figured it out. We got it done. And we're here now. So,
yeah. And I mentioned to you that it was really just the other day that I was walking through the neighborhood and I saw this new shop coming up. And it was being put together by this older fella, had to be maybe in his 50s. And we got into talking for a moment. He ends up mentioning to me that the biggest issues he's faced so far have been with the health department. There's just a whole lot of red tape there for him. And I thought of this, our upcoming convo, and I thought to ask what might be a tip or so for somebody who's just starting up like that, given that you've got this background with booze now.
What kind of business is it?
It's going to be a fruit and smoothie / tiny restaurant, tiny Mexican food shop.
My advice would be to be proactive and call whoever the health department. I mean, there's phone numbers online. You got to call them up and start doing some research and be active, proactive about it because they don't care. The health department, they're in the business of just, they get assigned a restaurant. They go in there and do what they got to do and they're out, you know, so. You know, they and their job is, you know, they got to maintain some sort of health standard for all restaurants and stuff. So their job is pretty difficult. So you got to understand that from their perspective. That means they also have time to worry about, hey, helping your business out either. So you got to be proactive and hit them up and be like, hey, what do I got to hear? What are some of the rules? What are regulations for this? Hit up some other restaurants that might have been the same kind of thing. And most of the time, the owners would be willing to help out, you know, send them an email or something like that. But being more proactive and figuring it out. I mean, that's what I had to do when I was opening up. I didn't understand anything about restaurant business. So I was just calling them up constantly. Hey, what do I got to do here? What's this? I don't know, you know. So and try to figure it out in that way. But you got to be proactive. You can't expect them to come and help you out because it's a government bureaucracy. And any government bureaucracy that exists, they're just a machine and they're just going to go and follow the rules and they continue to just, because there's no, you know, with all government agencies and government bureaucracies, there's no incentive for them to do well. Their job is to come, do their job, and they're out, follow the rules, regulations, and they're out. That's it. So you got to understand that from their perspective, there's no incentive for them to help your business be successful or help your business grow. It's really the person that you are, you have to be proactive. You have to go out and find out what it is and figure it out on your own because that's basically what entrepreneurship is. You cannot depend on, especially a government, to help you out.
Man, that is some sound advice. And of course, you also mentioned getting linked, starting up a network, starting up a community, and making something such as starting a business a conversation between you and a handful of other people. You also bring to mind that booze has a fascinating backstory in terms of how you came up with the name. So maybe tell me a little bit for a moment about how we got to booze, because I find it to be a fascinating, catchy name, but I want to know more about where it comes from.
So booze is named after my grandma. Her name was Lee Boo-soon, so it's actually a Korean name. And when my parents and I were coming up with a name, I felt that booze was the best name that we can. I think there was like two or three other names, but I think booze was the best because it just had a nice ring to it. I thought that it was something that we can, and there was something behind it, right? It was my grandma's name. My grandma, she was pretty much the only other person in Philadelphia that raised myself and my sister. She, because we, you know, when we were growing up, we didn't have extended, like a lot of extended family. I had two cousins in Jersey, aunt, uncle out there, and then my grandma in Philly. So it was just basically always my grandma, my immediate nuclear family, so my sister, myself, my parents, for the most part. So my grandma would always babysit my parents. You know, they were always working. So, or I would figure out we would have to go meet there or whatever it was. But she was the one that kind of was the other person to help raise us when we were growing up. So I just thought it would have been great to have that as kind of like an honor of my grandma as well, to make it something more of a family thing instead of like, hey, we're going to call ourselves some sort of random cheesesteak place name that makes no sense, you know? So it just made more sense in that sense. And I just remember, you know, all those memories of my grandma making food for us and feeding us. So it felt like it was the right name.
What kind of food would grandma make?
Oh, it was all Korean food. You know, she always made a lot of banchan, all kinds of good Korean food for us. So no complaints there whatsoever.
Yeah. Right. Everybody ate well. It was a whole lot of love from the family. Do you make any of these recipes now just at home on your own time?
No, my grandma made all this stuff by hand. So it was whenever she had time, she would just make it. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't. Now, it's not processed stuff. I would see her and my mom sometimes will help out and some other relatives when they come over. But they would make this stuff, you know, from scratch. So, you know, I wish I could, but to learn Korean cuisine is a lot of prep stuff, man.
Right. It's going to be another journey, just like with Brazilian jiu-jitsu or getting better at your jump shot out there. It's going to take a minute. Now, I'm walking around, I'm looking at the price of gas, I'm seeing the way that everything's going up. I got to ask you for a moment how this has affected your business. I got to ask you how, especially since the pandemic, things have shifted for y'all, including what the cost of everything is. Maybe you can tell us a little bit of the backstory here too.
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time, especially the last couple of years, really getting into the nitty-gritty about our financial system and how it works. Because, you know, when you own a business and you start seeing how money works and taxes and things of that nature, you got to start looking into what's really going on behind the scenes. And understanding how the government spends and understanding what the situation is, and obviously the geopolitical situation, you got to look at all the macro situations so you can understand your own personal micro situation. So, you know, there's a war going on in Russia with U.S., basically U.S. and Russia right now, and the U.S. is trying to start another war with China. A lot of different supply chains are getting broken apart, and so that means there's going to be increasing costs because, you know, then it's going to cost more money to, say, ship something from one part of the world to the other. And gas is one of those things. And gas is probably one of the main drivers of inflation because most of the world needs gas to operate, whether it's ships, planes, cars, whatever. Meanwhile, you have a strike going on. You have the writer's strike. Hopefully they figure it out with the actors. So there's no filming going on. There's no activity there. Then you have the UAW strike. They're not making cars right now. And then that's happening. So no cars are being made. So no economic activity is happening. And so there's all these pieces of the puzzle that are happening throughout the country right now and throughout the world. And it's all affecting the gas prices. So now I'm looking at the gas prices and I'm looking at it and I'm like, man, if this continues to go up, it's going to affect the cost of all my stuff, like cheese, you know, whatever it is, everything that we bring into the store. And so now I have to be aware of that because, I mean, our customers are price sensitive. I can't keep raising prices, you know what I'm saying? I just don't want to do that either because I want to present a value, a product that brings value for a good price. And so, you know, even if you go to McDonald's, man, I mean, yeah, it's super expensive, like compared to what it was before. And so everyone has to raise prices. Consumers are going to get squeezed. And so it's a very difficult situation. So if, to answer your question about how it's affecting us, I have to be even more vigilant as to what's going on around the world and around my, and around Los Angeles and everything, and understand what's happening and being able to understand how to maneuver from there, because I have to know, hey, what to expect in the next few months. Okay, cool. Well, oil prices can go a lot higher because winter's coming. And guess what? Back east, a lot of them houses, they need you know, heating oil and natural gas to heat their homes, right?
All over the Northern Hemisphere.
Exactly. So then that's not just here, it's in Europe. And then they just basically, they're not buying Russian gas. And the Saudis are saying, we're going to cut production. So there's all these things going on. I'm like, okay, all right. I need to be prepared for this and know where, hey, where can I cut some expenses here, right, or whatever I got to do, even when it's personal, so that I don't spend more than I have to, and to become much more leaner. And that's what I think I'm trying to do, is make my business very lean, very light, very efficient, so that we don't have to worry about these problems that I know are going to come down the pipeline, whether it's next month, 6 months, or a year from now. And then you have the elections in 2024, which is going to be chaotic for this country. So I got to prepare for all those things in terms of how we're going to operate.
Now, at this point, are you maybe every couple of weekends or so linking up with a planner, a budget analyst, or somebody who's basically going through your accounting with you to kind of look at the numbers and maybe see where these costs might be cut? How is that process working out for you as a small business owner?
So, yeah, right now, me and my team, we're going through all of our expenses and saying, hey, where can I cut? What do we need? What do we not need? And then we don't need that. All right, cool, cut it. So we've been doing that for the last 6 months. And I mean, for example, I had a marketing team and I realized, okay, cool, that's the first thing that I could cut because I'm going to do marketing myself.
Right.
Right. So we're just going through all the little nitty gritty things and say, we don't need that. We don't need this. We don't need that. What do you guys need this? They say, oh, we don't need this. Oh, we need this. So we'll just go through that. I'm like, all right, cool. Well, we don't need it. All right, let's cut it. So it's more of a team thing. Because I can't see what they don't need or what they do need all the time.
Of course, of course. And actually, we're talking a little bit about the inside of the business up to a point. But I want to ask you about the outside. I want to ask you a little bit about the city of Los Angeles and how the city of LA is doing in relation to your small businesses at this point. And in particular, what I got in mind are the growing number of people without shelter and how that is likely impacting small shops like yours, because when pedestrians go through a street like Wilshire Boulevard, where your second location is at, you can see that, oh man, like there are a whole lot more people today out on the sidewalk than there were just a handful of years ago. And I can imagine that it's affecting your shop to one extent or another. So maybe you can shed some light on this for us.
Yeah. So the homeless situation, it's gotten definitely worse over the past 3 years since the pandemic started. And yes, is there a mental health issue with a lot of them? Yes. Are there ones that are taking advantage of the system? Yes.
Hey, Los Angeles. I hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as I am. I just want to take a moment to invite you to my Patreon channel, which supports JT the LA Storyteller podcast in more ways than one, and which also provides just a little more from each convo. And of course, this is because it takes a little bit of work to put this podcast together, including research and reaching out to folks and scheduling things. And then studio time, editing time, finally publishing, and then a little bit of marketing time. And the Patreon channel is just the best way to support all of that, to support independent storytelling in LA by JT the LA Storyteller. So I would love your support, and I can give you my word that it's going to be more than worth it. Now, back to the show.
So we have a situation where it's a bureaucracy. Once again, you have people eating off, for example, you have the homeless, the homeless industrial complex, where people that work in the homeless industry, they're going to be out of a job if they get rid of homeless people. So of course they're going to make sure that they have a job. That means you need to continue to have homeless people on the streets. So they're not going to provide the full-on services that these people need to get off the streets, right? And so that's frustrating because I'm like, okay, well, my tax dollars are going, you know, we're paying crazy tax dollars to this city. And, you know, you have this major bureaucracy, like I said, of people that are working for the government. And not to say that, you know, they're bad people or good people. It's just more just the system allows for this because it's how the system works. It's government. It gets too big. And then you have people that have a job and they're going to, you know, they're going to maintain their job. They're not going to try to lose their job, right? So looking at that from that perspective, I'm like, okay, cool. Well, this is not going to get fixed unless you have a person that comes in and literally just starts chopping at government programs, which is not going to happen, right? So now I know that this is going to be an existing situation for a long period of time. And so for me, it was my security for my staff that I first had to really consider and say, hey, listen, we need to make sure we have a protocol because, you know, we've already been robbed a couple times in Koreatown before the pandemic. And, you know, a lot of these shops are getting robbed. There's a lot of assaults, things of that nature. The cops aren't going to come just because they're not capable. They're already short staffed. And obviously due to political situations, a lot of times they're not going to get involved unless it's a real crazy situation, right? And so, you know, I decided for myself, for my team, that, hey, let's minimize as much of the of what we used to do before and try to really get down to doing security. I had a whole thing where, like, hey, I had a company come out and teach us how to do a tourniquet and apply a chest seal and how to stop a stab or gunshot wound. That's where it's come down to because... Right. That's the situation we're in. And, you know, as a person, I want to see the city do well and everyone do well. But at the same time, it's like a combination of, you know, the city not being able to deliver just because of the way the whole system is set up. And so now we're in a situation where we have to know how to survive on our own and be able to be independent in how we approach it. And so, yeah, basically we've been worrying about security, making sure, hey, guys, you know, how to approach it. And, you know, it sucks because you don't want to have a business situation where you have to worry about security, but you see it every day. I see it every day. I see people get assaulted every day. I go to my local Target. They're getting robbed every day. Like, it's the craziest stuff, right? And, you know, what can I do for the time being? Like I said, it's just making sure my staff and my business in that situation is safe and we don't have to worry about that as much as possible and trying to figure out what the next steps are. But, you know, you hope that the next group of people that come in are in government are going to be able to do something about it. But my concern is that there's not going to be a big change in how things operate in this city for quite some time. So I don't know. Like I said, all I could do is just kind of hope for the best and prepare for the worst at this point.
You know, it reminds me a lot of this article I read very recently about staff at the LAPL or the LA Public Library's Central Branch receiving Narcan training because Narcan is a way to basically reduce the chance of an overdose since they've seen so much of this on their sidewalks and inside of their library that they have to know how to put an end to this in an emergency situation. And so I think booze and the library and a whole lot of small business located in especially dense centers have to do exactly that. They've got to prepare for the worst at the same time that they hope for the best. And it also reminds me, of course, of what you are talking to me about when we're discussing the rise in the cost of oil and how this is likely to affect your business. I imagine that construction for shelters, construction for transitional or supportive housing is also very much dependent on market rates and what is less affordable today than it was just 3 months ago, if not 3 years ago. And so, as you noted, these things tend to stall. They tend to slow down progress on so many different fronts. And then to small business owners or people who are just living their everyday lives, the city seems locked in the same place it was, with the situation having become only more pronounced over time. And so things tend not to change. And this becomes a huge concerning point for the question of how we stay in business, because it also appears to me that, like, huge developers and some of these loft builders, some of these luxury loft builders, they seem to be right on schedule despite everything. And I wonder a little bit if you think about that on the K-Town side as well, where there is so much incoming development, but especially on the higher end side. You've seen this play out in a very special way just over the last 10 years, I imagine, given, yeah, almost 10 years in K-Town for booze.
Well, I mean, just on the commercial side, those big commercial developers, they're in big trouble. Big trouble. I mean, there's a big property manager or owner up in SF. They just walked away from their building, like a multi-million dollar building, just because right now the main issue is that the government or the Fed is raising their Fed funds rate every quarter. Well, they're going to probably raise it again. And so now all of these commercial developers are like, yo, we can't renew. They renegotiate their loans, and they can't do an 8-9%, which is going to be like in their 8-9% range for their next loans. When they go ahead and they have to roll over their loans, they're not going to be able to afford 8-9%. And I don't know if you've noticed it, but if you drive around, there's for lease signs everywhere. So, you know, I get it. The property developers are doing what they got to do to at least break even so that they can sell the property at some point. But all of this is going to be a very bad situation in the next few years, because, you know, a lot of property developers, when they buy a property, when they sell a property and you sell it to a group or whatever, they need to take out a loan. And the loans that they're going to be taking out are going to be 8-9%. They're not going to be able to get that loan. Or they're not going to want to take on a loan where they're getting 8-9%, and they're going to have a property that's going to be, you know, empty, right? Because you can't continue to $4,000 for a one bedroom in K-Town. That's freaking ridiculous, or right, whatever, $3,000 to $3,500. That's ridiculous. But you know, there's this game that's going on, and it looks pretty scary, because, and, you know, a lot of people, and, you know, like I said, like, you got to know what's going on, and me under, you know, I don't know everything about how the property developers are going to try to play this game that they're doing, but I mean, the situation's getting pretty real, and, you know, I got to be aware of it. But, you know, football season started, so everyone's just back to normal, right? Football season, it is Monday night, Thursday night, keep you busy, keep you not even thinking about it. And I'm watching the situation unfold. I mean, you could just literally go down any street in LA now and you just see for lease signs everywhere, whether it's retail or whether it's for an apartment or whether it's for an office.
Right.
And so I don't know. I don't know how crazy this can get. I lived through 2008 and 2009. I remember when people got laid off like crazy. I remember the economy just tanking. I remember people were trying to sell their houses like crazy. So, you know, like I said, you can only prepare for hope for the best and prepare for the worst, because it's you know, you're bringing up the property developer situation. I'm looking at all the, like, I have an office. I was like, I don't need it anymore.
Right.
So I got rid of it. I don't need to pay, you know, whatever, $1,000, whatever it is to have an office space, because everyone can work from a home.
Right. I mean, that's the same situation with WeWork.
Right.
WeWork was another spot where you can do whatever creative work you're up to. Why don't you do it in community with other creators? Guess what? That ends up being extremely expensive or excessive. And now that's a done story. WeWork is long past us. And yep, I think we've seen just over the last couple of years with Silicon Valley Bank and also these layoffs, especially at these large streaming sites, that we're in for another turn. We are like right in the middle of an inflection point. But given where we are with K-Town, with the density there, with the amount of crime going up just as well, with a lack of services for folks, and then this complex, as we've noted it, really is time to buckle down and see what you're doing, how you can make that the most efficient, and how you can essentially lean on your longtime customers and those new customers who are willing to support this business because it brings value at a good rate just as well, which is kind of an old-fashioned story, as in that's what small business has been in America for a long, long time. You kind of have to look inward, let the political situation play out as it will, because at the end, it is you and your team, and it sounds like this is very much where you're at with Booze right now.
Yeah, it's just, it's the basics, right? You can only control what you can control within your sphere of influence, right? So I'm not going to be able to tell you who's going to win the presidency. I'm not going to tell you how you stop this war in Ukraine. But you know what I can do? I can work on being physically fit myself, being a better leader, looking at my business and saying, hey, what do we need here? What do we need here? What do we not need here? What can we do to be lean and simple and basic? Because at the end of the day, my main thing is, can we provide a delicious cheesesteak at an affordable price for as many people as possible? That's basic. To do that, there's all the stuff that I need to do. Okay, cool. I got to run my business as efficiently as possible. Make sure make sure my guys are taken care of, make sure they're happy. And we're, making sure we're running a tighter budget and knowing that, hey, we're expecting this situation that's going to get crazy over the next year or two. Be prepared for it, because it's going to happen. Whether people like to kind of not think about it or not, I don't know how bad it can get. It could probably just be mild. It could be crazy. I don't know. But, hey, I'd rather be prepared for it and say, all right, cool. Well, hey, our gas prices, can it go to 8? Possibly. I mean, who would have thought that would be 6-7 bucks, 2 years ago, right? So, like I said, you got to just prepare for it, and hopefully it doesn't get too crazy. But, I always tell people, hey, be lean, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't be excessive. Like, try to do the best you can to control what you got right around you, yourself, and things you're doing, and then, of course, what your business is doing, and that's all you can do at this point.
I can definitely hear the martial arts and the jiu-jitsu right there all through it. And, yeah, it's interesting as well, Drew, because I was talking about it with a friend just the other day, that this idea of living excessively, this idea of living way beyond your means, that strikes me as a very recent phenomenon. I think just less than 120 years ago, really, most people were just about getting by and not necessarily living extremely well. But that idea, the idea of living extremely well and it being make or break for most people along these lines, that's not like a thing. It's just that it's so well marketed or propagandized up to a point that, hey, like, now everyone thinks they need to make it big and become a huge billion-dollar grossing company out there, when in fact, if you go lean, you end up getting by just as most people have done since, time immemorial. So it seems to me like, yeah, we're getting back to basics, but getting back to basics is also doing away with this idea that success can only be defined by a couple of terms. No, it sounds to me like, especially when we can affect change locally and within our own lives, that is what determines success for us.
Yo, listen, this is the craziest thing. So I grew up in a religious household, so I'm very familiar with the Bible, read a bit of the Quran, took different religious classes and stuff, and understand for the basics what Buddhism is all about. But if you look at all the religions around the world, a lot of the things they talk about is not, depending on the riches of the world, right? It's harder for a rich man to get into heaven than a camel through the eye of a needle, right? I think that's the phrase. Sorry if I said that incorrectly.
Got that.
But as I've gotten older, I've realized that these things that these religious texts and just older documents discuss in terms of like not wanting things. Like, one of the main things I did during the pandemic, especially during the pandemic, before, I was not watching commercials as much. But when I stopped watching, and I love sports, but when I stopped watching sports and I stopped seeing commercials, I didn't want stuff anymore.
Mm.
And so because of that, I don't want things. I don't need things. I need food, but I was like, do I really need that extra? Do I want to look? I have jeans, right? I still wear the same pair or whatever. Do I really need a new one? Do I really care what I look like? I wear the same stuff every day. I do the same things every day. And so, you know, as I've gotten older, I'm like, hey, I don't really need like 90% of this stuff that they told me I need to have to be cool, right? And so I'm very, very basic in terms of like what I want and what I need. Just to, you know, do I want some good steak and lobster once in a while? Why not? Of course. But or have my cheesesteak every once a week for my cheat meal or whatever, right? But aside from all that stuff, I don't really need anything. But the way you see how everything propagates itself through social media, you see it through TikTok, Instagram, is like you'll see all the influencers in some country or doing crazy stuff, and they got to look this way, and they got to have this kind of look, and then you eventually have to have this kind of house and this kind of car. Like 90% of that stuff is fake. They rent the freaking cars. You know what I'm saying? They rent those things just to, you know, push some sort of thing. So everyone gets into this whole cycle of, I need to have this. I need to get this. I need to look like this. I need to, you know, do this trip to this and this and this and that. And I'm like, you don't need like 90% of this stuff. You just need to have some food and it's a sustenance that helps you grow and be fit and all that kind of good stuff. And then of course, you know, obviously your cheat meal, Boost Philly cheesesteaks, always delicious cheat meal.
Marketing 101 right there.
But also like, you know, getting, you know, your shit together in terms of how you're focused on bettering yourself, those good people around you and things of that nature. And once you start doing that, do you really need to have a 50,000 square foot home? No. I mean, if you're a wealthy individual and you have to, because you have to put some money into a property and obviously it's an asset, makes sense, of course. But for the regular individual out there, you don't need to have, you know, 10,000 pairs of J's. You don't need to have, you know, a Gucci this and an LV that and whatever. You don't, girls don't even need diamond rings. You know what I'm saying? It's just so crazy. So people get into this mode of like, I need this and this and this. You don't need any of that. You know, at the end of the day, what you need is your family. Hopefully you maintain a good relationship with your family as best as possible, your friends, some good food, some good times, a few drinks, whatever. And then obviously, you know, doing what you love and figuring out that whole situation. That's really what you need all in life, man. And it's just crazy. You read all like these old texts and books and stuff. It's human history. It's the same thing over again right now. People are acting stupid, acting crazy, you know, trying to make an image of themselves, of who they are not, just to get likes and clicks and engagement. And at the end of the day, that 90% of that is fake, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I think that it's important to self-reflect a little bit, get away from watching all this propaganda and commercials, and just spend some time with yourself and figure out what you really enjoy and then figure it out from there. But, you know, it is what it is. That's how the system works right now. So,
and so you heard it here right from Andrew Ann himself, owner and president of Boo's Philly Cheesesteak LLC, located in the Silver Lake, East Hollywood, as well as the K-Town area, especially for those of you all who are on your grind, who are on your workouts. As Andrew said, when you get a cheat meal, looking at Boo's, including the new mini box, right? Maybe shout that out for just a quick sec for those folks who are wondering.
Thank you. We have a mini box in Koreatown. It's two mini cheesesteaks, side of fries, side of cheese, two drinks, two sodas for $20, or two beers or two alcoholic beverages for $25 for the same box. And it's just more of like a little couple sharing, or just like a to-go thing that we wanted to kind of promote. So that's what we got going only in Koreatown right now. And we have beer and wine in Koreatown as well.
Man, so you heard it here. If you got a buddy, or if you're heading out on the town for a minute, you stop by Wilshire Boulevard, check out Boo's. For just about $20 or $10 each, you get a soda and a little piece of Philly for your filling. So I totally dig that. And man, I've had a great time chatting with you this AM. I really appreciate your taking out the time from your busy schedule to chop it up with us. And Drew, we are here. We're in this. We are absolutely about Boo's Philly Cheesesteak when we get the day for it. And once again, I got to thank you for this, man.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, man. This is great.
What a pleasure. All right, y'all. Until the next time, this has been JT, the LA Storyteller Podcast. You already know where to find us. Be sure to hit that follow/subscribe button, and we'll see you at the next one. Until then, stay vigilant and stay tuned. It's J.T. out with more soon. It's Jimbo times.